Welcome to Kansas City Cannabis, where local roots and city pride thrive. Whether you're new or seasoned to cannabis, our expert bud tenders offer guidance and a welcoming atmosphere at our four KC locations. Experience genuine service and hometown heart. Visit kccannabis.org for more.
Border Patrol is presented by Walker Medical Linen Services. Walker Medical Linen specializes in bed linens, towels, scrubs, and lab coats. Family owned and operated for over 140 years. Find out why hospitals of all sizes, surgery centers, and medical clinics trust Walker Medical Linen. Online at walkermls.com.
The Royals made some moves on the very final moments of trade deadline day yesterday. And to break it down for us now is Max Reaper, the editor-in-chief of Royals Review. You can follow Royals Review online at Royals Review on Twitter. Good morning, Max. How are you?
I'm great. I'm a big fan of the show. I'm glad to be on. I appreciate it.
Hey, well, is this your Border Patrol debut, right?
I think it is. Yeah, I'm a rookie.
Okay, well, let's. How about that? tell us a little bit about yourself for our audience. How did you get involved with Royals Review, and maybe just tell us a little cliff notes of your backstory as a big Royals fan and writer now.
Oh sure, yeah. So we're part of the SB Nation network of blogs. So anyone that's familiar with Arrowhead Pride, we're part of the same network. They're kind of our sister site. So we're the Royals equivalent of them. And they do a great job, of course, covering the Chiefs. And we're just fans. We're just people that are kind of maybe uber fans who follow the team, closely and like to discuss what's going on. So, I've been doing this for about 8 years now and covering the team. And just happens that I started when the team got good. So maybe, hopefully we get to see them kind of rise again. But it's been a lot of fun. We got a lot of great fans. We got a community of fans that discuss the trades with really minute detail. So if you like to nerd out about baseball and the Royals, I mean, we definitely welcome all comers. I mean, if you're just a casual fan, definitely welcome as well.
We're all about nerding out here on the Border Patrol, so you're in the right place. Hey, real quick, before we get into the actual activities by the Royals, I know you were on Twitter talking about Vin Scully as well. Any thoughts on one of, if not the greatest broadcasters in American sports history, Vin Scully?
Yeah, so when you think of like who is the voice of baseball, like his voice is like the voice I think of when I think of a broadcast on baseball. I mean, the guy broadcast Jackie Robinson and Sandy Koufax and all the way to Clayton Kershaw. He did the 1989 All Star Game with Bo Jackson hitting that home run. I mean, he's been in so many big moments that he just is kind of the soundtrack of the game. And he was just a tremendously humble. Intellectual, and like you said, like it's really good. Sometimes he just knew when to be quiet and let the moment speak for itself. So just a tremendous loss in the baseball community. But what a life. I mean, what an incredible life he was able to lead, and he will be missed.
94 years old, and he just seemed like he was sharp as a tack all the way to the end. It was incredible. He aged like a fine wine, too. All right, Max, let's get into the Royals trade deadline stuff. Just first off, how about overall? How did you feel about the way the Royals approached the trade deadline and basically all the business that they did? If you look at all in its totality, how do you feel about the Royals' activities?
Yeah, so I think the team has talked a little bit about being a little more transactional and wanting to be a little more aggressive in deals. And I think they pretty much did that. I mean, I think, they made six trades this summer, which is a lot, I think, for the Royals. They acquired 12 new players. Most of those are minor leaguers. And that's, counting the Carlos Santana trade, Andrew Benintendi trade, the trade with the Braves for the draft pick, and then the Luke Weaver trade earlier this week. And then, of course, the two deals yesterday with Whit Merrifield going to Toronto and Cam Gallagher going to San Diego. So, I think they did add a big infusion of talent here. And look, they didn't have any blue chippers. They didn't have a Juan Soto to bring back some blue chippers. So with what they had, I thought they did a pretty good job. I think with Royals fans, if they're looking at any downside, I think you'd say, okay, well, there are some missed opportunities here. we saw a pretty robust market for relievers. I think I counted 16 relievers traded in the last 2 days. The Royals have some, you know, I know the bullpen's struggled this year, but they've got a couple decent arms out there in Scott Barlow. I think Josh Staumont would still have a lot of trade value, even though his walks are kind of high and he's been hurt a little bit. And I think Taylor Clark is kind of overlooked a little bit as a guy that has really pitched well for the last 6 weeks. Really, he was only given up a couple runs in his last 20 outings. So they had some assets there, and you kind of wonder where there's maybe missed opportunities. And, you know, the Royals have kind of missed the window a little bit with some of these guys. I mean, a lot of the trade market is all about timing, right? We've seen, I think what I got from the trade market this year was that teams were really aggressive about kind of taking guys that were peaking at their value and trading them out. So, like, the Orioles took Jorge Lopez, who we just let go, were able to tinker with his repertoire a little bit. He becomes an all-star, and they flip him for four players immediately instead of hanging on to him. And they're a team that's kind of, you know, pretty decent this year. They're perhaps in the periphery of the pennant race. They decided, no, we're not going to hang on to him. We're just going to flip him for assets now. Now, that's a little – I think it's a little overly aggressive maybe, but the point is they're trying to kind of maximize their window of trading players at their peak value. Now, you know, are the Royals kind of missing that? They kind of missed out with Whit Merrifield, I think. You know, they got a pretty good return for what he is now, but they probably should have traded him 2 years ago, right? So – I think that's maybe the downside. If you want to look at that, okay, could they have done more? But realistically, you're not going to see a team trade away 8-9 guys off a major league roster. With what they had on the roster, I think they did a pretty good job getting anything of value for Carlos Santana a month ago, getting pretty good value, I think, for Whit Merrifield in a down year, and then go ahead and trading him, and then getting a player like get the prospect call they got for Benintendi earlier this week, I think was okay. So I think they did what they had to do, and they did okay. I think, like, Royals fans are just wondering, should they have done more?
Yeah, I mean, I guess that to me is the question. And the thing that's always difficult is none of us have access to the conversations that were or were not had, right? The thing is, so all we can go by is what we're told. And leading up to the trade deadline, J.J. Piccolo basically was talking about how we feel like we don't need to trade any of these guys, speaking, let's say, of the bullpen guys like Barlow and Staumont, because they have player control going into next year on these guys, and they wouldn't be upset if those guys were on the roster. That makes it seem like, okay, well, we're just willing back, and I think he kind of implied we're willing to sit back and listen to offers, but we're not out desperately trying to shop these guys. So then you wonder, okay, well, how aggressive were they? You know, was J.J. Piccolo on the phone trying to work up deals for these guys, or was he literally just sitting back and fielding offers? Because there is a difference, and was he being completely honest with that quote, or is that him trying to, you know, leverage him, you know, position himself in a position of strength where he's telling the other teams, like, look, we don't need to take any offer you get on these guys. We want good offers. I don't know what the case is there. But it did seem like, I think a lot of us thought when they brought Weaver in, okay, that's setting the stage for a reliever trade. Were you of that mindset when that trade happened?
Yeah, absolutely. I thought they were adding some depth just to get someone in for this year, and then that was going to, you know, set up some further deals. And frankly, I thought trading Emmanuel Rivera away, leaving them kind of exposed at third base, there's not really a backup plan there unless they decide they're going to go with Hunter Dozier, or Bobby Witt's going to move back to third, or maybe Michael Massey's going to try to, you know, give it a go at third. I wasn't, you know, there's no obvious backup plan there, so I thought, okay, maybe they're going to try to acquire a long-term solution at third base at the deadline, which that didn't happen either. And yeah, I hear those comments from JJ a lot, and some of it I think is kind of sending a signal to other teams, hey, give us your best offer. We don't want, and being a little cagey, you don't want to tell players, hey, yeah, we're shopping all of you guys. But the fact that they've said consistently, we don't shop players. We don't, like, go around saying, we got to get rid of Barlow. That, to me, so I think there is something to that when they say it so much like that. And I think you do kind of have to be a little aggressive in selling these players, right? I mean, there's a lot of players that got traded the last 2 days, and, you know, teams may not ask about Scott Barlow if they don't think he's available, you know. So, you're right. We don't have an idea of what was being discussed. And we may say, why didn't they trade Scott Barlow? But maybe there wasn't really a team out there willing to give up good value for him, right? He's had diminished velocity this year. He had a bad weekend in New York, and I know that wasn't all his fault, but Some teams may have seen something they didn't like. So we don't know what they were, what teams were offering, but we do know what teams did. And so a team like Toronto, who the Royals obviously were engaged with, they made an acquisition of two relievers from the Miami Marlins. Anthony Bass, a 34-year-old who's having a career year, and Zach Pop, who's kind of a journeyman who's done okay this year. So they were obviously in the market for relievers. They ended up giving up a shortstop, Jordan Groshans, who is before the year was a top 100 prospect. He's had a bad year, so his stock has really fallen. But he's a shortstop who has a good hit tool, was a former first-round pick, and, you know, certainly a guy with upside. And you wonder, could the Royals have gotten him if they had dangled Scott Barlow and maybe another relief arm and maybe, another piece with, like, Whit Merrifield? We don't know. And maybe that's not a player the Royals were interested in. Maybe Groshans does nothing for them. They already have Bobby Witt at shortstop. They don't like, his decline this year or whatever. But, we certainly do know there were teams out there looking for relievers. And what I've seen from a lot of teams, they're aggressively dealing these guys that have several years of club control left. So I think I kind of feel like you have to be a little aggressive selling your players a little bit. And so you have to wonder if maybe that, like I said, that's a missed opportunity for the Royals.
Once again, we're visiting with Max Rieper. You can follow all of his work at Royals Review on Twitter and elsewhere. Let's get into the Whit Merrifield situation. First of all, a chef's kiss to the irony and poetry of the fact that he has been traded to the Toronto Blue Jays. I don't know what's going to happen there, how that's going to work out, but I could not get over that yesterday. Of all places, he's going to go to the Toronto Blue Jays. But what did you think of the return that the Royals were able to get for him?
Yeah, I thought it was a pretty good return, actually, for what he has been this year. I mean, I know he's hit a little bit better recently, but we all know he's had a declining decline in his performance the last couple of years, and especially this year. He is a versatile player. He does provide, backups for Toronto, I think, at every position. But, his bat isn't what it once was. And so they got, two players who are kind of on the periphery of like a top 20 list, if you were to say, which is, an inexact way of evaluating these prospects. But Samad Taylor really sounds like a younger version of Whit Merrifield. I mean, he's a guy that has good speed, can get on base a little bit, plays second base and outfield. And he's already at the AAA level. He's hurt for the year. He may not make a play anymore this season, but, next year it sounds like he could compete maybe for a roster spot at the major league level. So I think that's pretty good value for Whit Merrifield. And then you get Max Castillo, who is not a huge prospect or anything, but he's a guy that's already at the big league level, pitched a little bit at the big league level. He's a big boy. He's stands at, 280 is what he's listed at. I don't know what his actual weight is in real life, but he's a big kid, but I like those bigger bodies. Like the guys that I think they're a little more durable. He can pitch. He's got a pretty good arsenal of pitches, a fastball, changeup, a little bit of a slider as well. And so he's a guy that is pretty versatile, can give them some starts, can give them long relief innings, perhaps even, could ramp it up as a short reliever as well. So I like adding that to a team that has really struggled to find innings out of their starters and relievers this year. So I think that'll be pretty useful. So these aren't high upside guys. These are kind of high floor, like they're already major league ready. Role players, future role players, but you need that. You need that at the big league level, especially small market teams that don't want to go out and spend $2-3 million for a utility player. You can get a Samad Taylor and have that kind of production with the younger guys. And who knows? Maybe he turns into something more. Lorenzo Cain wasn't a highly thought of prospect. He was a AAA guy who supposedly had a low ceiling, but they were able to get an all-star performance out of him. So you never know with these guys. But I like the return. It is a lower ceiling return, but getting some useful role players that the Royals can have for the next 5-6 years, I think is pretty useful.
So before I get to this next question, real quick, thoughts on the Cam Gallagher trade? Anything that stands out to you there?
Well, it was kind of obvious they needed to trade Gallagher, right? They're kind of deep at catching at the high levels. And Brent Rooker, he's okay. I mean, he's got some power. Maybe he's in the mix as a fourth or fifth outfielder. I would have preferred they got, a younger guy, like a 19-year-old, kid in the Dominican Summer League or something like that. Just some kind of lottery ticket that had a little more upside than Rooker, who, frankly, might not be on the team next year. But it's fine. Cam Gallagher is an okay player, but backup catchers aren't going to net much. So getting Rooker, who at least can give you some major league playing time, I think, is fine value.
All right, finally, Max, looking forward to the rest of this season, are there any guys in particular you really want to take a look at that maybe either are not up here yet or are not getting a ton of opportunities? Who are some of the players of the future that you're most interested in seeing the rest of this season?
Well, I think right now all eyes are on Michael Massey, and I guess he got pulled from the Omaha game last night. It seemed like there would be a good spot for him now, and I'm interested in seeing if they put him at second base, which is a more natural position, and there is kind of an opening there now with Whit Merrifield gone. I don't know if Nicky Lopez is going to play there or Massey, or if they're going to try Massey at third base, like I said, because there's no heir apparent there. So it'll be interesting to see how they kind of massage this roster, how the lineup looks. But Massey's the guy. I mean, he's a guy. I know the Alex Duvall at Royals Farm Report's been all over him. He's been showing what great power he has for a middle infielder, tremendous defender at second base. So you kind of don't want to pull his glove off that position. He won the Gold Glove in the minor leagues, so you kind of like to leave him there. But we saw a glimpse of him in Toronto. So I'm really eager to see what he can do on an everyday basis. I think we're starting to see the lineup that Royals fans want. We have a younger lineup here. There's still Hunter Dozier and Michael A. Taylor and Salvi, but for the most part, this is the younger lineup, and it's more exciting that way. You see hope for the future. You don't see a 41-63 last place baseball team. You see, okay, this is what our lineup is like in 2023 and 2024, and we can get used to these guys and familiar with them, and I can buy a Nick Prado jersey, and I can get used to seeing MJ Melendez and Michael Massey in the lineup every day. So it's a lot more exciting in the second half to see those kind of guys. I don't know if we'll see too many more of them. Nate Eaton, we may see him come back up. I don't know that he's a big prospect, but he's certainly a nice utility player who, obviously hit a home run in Toronto, and I think could be a valuable part as well. But Massey's the guy I've kind of kept my eye on, because I think right now, if you look at the farm system, he's probably one of the top prospects now that Prado and Melendez have graduated. So the Royals still have to stock their farm system. Drew Waters, I guess, could be another one as well. He's hit really well for Omaha, so he may be due for a call-up as well, and we can see kind of the fruits of some of these trades.
Hey, Max, it's been really fun having you on the show. Hopefully we get to do it again really soon sometime. Thanks a lot.
Sounds great, Nate. I appreciate it.
All right, that is Max Reaper from Royals Review. We'll take a break back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Talk a little Kansas football with a good buddy of mine and Kansas football legend, Orange Bowl winner, Brandon McAnderson joins us, part of the Jayhawk Radio Network as well. Good morning, B-Mac. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing fine, man. Hey, the reason that that I called you to have you come on the show, too, before we get into the KU football stuff, is the fact that I was invited to play in a celebrity softball tournament this coming weekend in Lawrence at Arocha Park at 11:30 on Saturday morning. And it's to benefit the Boys and Girls Club of Lawrence. And I was told that last year at this event, one Brandon McAnderson was the MVP because he hit a walk-off home run. Am I getting all that information correct?
It was a grand slam to take us to extra innings, where we ended up losing.
Oh, yeah.
but it was a grand slam to get us to extra innings, and then we lost. So.
Man, but what a moment! A grand slam to get the game to extra innings. Were you a ball player? I mean, I know you're obviously a fantastic football player. Were you a baseball guy too growing up?
No, I played in my dad's from Dominican Republic, so he loved baseball. So we did a lot of baseball training, but I actually only played 2 years. I played like third and fourth grade, and just determined that it wasn't for me, and I moved on to track and field as my spring sport. But yeah, it's not something I've done often. That was my first softball game, so this will be my second.
Oh, wow. And I mean, look at this guy. He's hitting grand slams in his like first ever softball game. Tell me about the event. How fun was it last year, and what should I look forward to this year?
Well, it was so much fun last year, just having community engagement, having a chance to celebrate the Boys and Girls Club, a club that I grew up in. Also hearing you talk about Vince Scully and, you know, wanting to be him. I grew up wanting to be Nate Buchady. Now I have to play against you in a softball tournament and, like, you know, kill my hero.
Yeah. Yes, sir!
So there's a little bit of that going on, too. But, no, it's a great time, and I just like to have a lot of fun with it. I want it to be a great time. There's a dinner the night before, so I'm going to come out and celebrate being a former Boys and Girls Club member and celebrate being a person that was raised in Lawrence, Kansas, and it just makes me happy that they invite me back to these things.
Well, so you were tell me about your time as a Boys and Girls Club member as a kid.
So as a kid, the interesting relation to Boys and Girls Club is that I was just there every day. You know, the Little League football team, my dad coached it for about 16 years, and he started when I was in second grade. So I played football there. I played basketball there. I did everything there. My core group of friends that I grew up with grew up in the Boys and Girls Club. Alyssa Bornoff is the director. She's fantastic. Her enthusiasm, I told her, you know, it's impossible to say no to her because she truly loves her job. She truly loves these kids. And every time she asks me, it's going to be a yes. So I love having a chance to pay back some of the fondest memories of my childhood.
Yeah, Alyssa does a tremendous job. She used to work in Kansas Athletics back in the day when I was working on the Kansas women's basketball games and sidelines for KU football. You jokingly said that you wanted to be Nate Buchady when you grew up. I know that's not really the case, but you are walking in my very substantial shoes as a sideline reporter for KU football, and you actually bring the chops of knowing a thing or two about the game, especially at the college level. How did you enjoy it, by the way? How have you enjoyed that job so far?
It's the best thing ever. You know, you kind of think about what you want to do when you start to get a hold of these things. I don't know if I would want to do anything else. You know, your proximity to the game, your ability to feel it and see it. Sometimes I know what's happening without actually seeing it. To see the players' emotions and the way they interact with each other, it's just a special opportunity to stand down there and really, truly be a part of the game, you know, without the anxiety of having to perform. So, you know, it's kind of the best of both worlds.
Yeah, nobody's trying to run through your face when you're on the sidelines. You do have to kind of have your head on a swivel sometimes if you get a little too close to the action, you know. I think I got barreled into a couple times with plays that spilled out of bounds. But I want to talk to you about this KU football team and some of the experiences you had with Lance Leipold's first season last year and how you see it translating to this year. And I'm curious, so you look, you played the last time that the Jayhawks really had a real solid quarterback. It was Todd Reesing, and you were on those teams. I felt like, and look, I'm not going to put him in any kind of category like that, and I don't want to put too much pressure on it, but we saw Jalen Daniels come out last year in a short period of time in some pressure-packed moments, perform better than any quarterback that I can remember over this past 10 years for the University of Kansas. You were down there on the sidelines. What did you see from him in that brief window last year, and how much optimism do you have about him going into year number two?
So first, I have a ton of optimism. You know, you don't want to throw out Todd as a benchmark to work to, but it's also not close to how much more talented Jalen Daniels is than Todd Reesing. I mean, his arm strength to whip the ball from the right hash to the sideline on a 10-yard out is pro level. I've seen him make throws down the middle, made one against West Virginia where the safety was certain he could two-way these routes. You know, he had two vertical routes. Jalen Daniels put it right in there. This guy has arm strength. He's got athleticism. He put on weight to support a healthier season, and he has charisma. Nate, this is a guy that you need on this show because he the lights shine brighter when he walks in a room. The guy has so much charisma, so much enthusiasm, and the way that people around him respond. I have really high hopes. I really, really look forward to watching him play quarterback here for the next 3 years.
Man, you're not doing much to calm me down because, you know, I'm sitting here trying to, like, to tamper my expectations. I just don't want to heap too much on the kid. But, the proof was in the pudding a little bit last year. I mean, the numbers even kind of spoke for themselves about how different the Jayhawks offense looked when he was at quarterback than any other quarterback we've seen over the last 10 years. Now, you talk about the talent, and obviously that's a huge component to it, but we know the quarterback position's also about a lot more than that, because if it was just about physical talent, then Todd Reesing wouldn't be the greatest quarterback that the Jayhawks have ever had in my lifetime, right? But he was, because he had that moxie. He had – oh, no, he had a great supporting cast, too. I'd point that out. But he had – he had that it factor that got things done at the quarterback position. You're talking to me about the way that Jalen Daniels lights up a room when he comes in. What about his leadership abilities, and how much growth have you seen from him in those regards?
I think all of those things have been A+. And you're right about Todd. Todd was a great player, an all-time great. And his talent, it wasn't always about his talent. It was about his moxie and his guts and his toughness. You know, Kerry Meyer, you'd watch Kerry Meyer practice, and you'd have picked Kerry Meyer 10 times out of 10. It's just Todd has something different. And I think to Jalen's credit, he's got that too. You know, the Texas game's the one we won where he played really well. But you looked at that TCU game, was a game we had a chance to win. Everything didn't go well in that game. You know, there were struggles that he overcame. You know, there were misfires. There was inconsistency on offense. But when we needed it, he came up big every single time. So that's why I'm so optimistic about him. You know, I know I've seen a lot of numbers about his production over the last 3 weeks, you know, ranking first in QBR and third in quarterback rating and yards and, you know, all those top three statistics he was in that last three games. I was more excited at just about how the team changed in an instant. You know, and it's interesting because talk about talent. I mean, Jason Bean's really talented. You know, it's not like he was someone that couldn't play at all. And he stepped in and elevated it to another level. So that just tells you that it wasn't just talent. It was about his ability to connect to his teammates, his ability to make clutch plays, and his eagerness to be big in the biggest moments.
So let's get back to just the optimism for this season, you know, going into year two of the Lance Leipold era. And this time around, we had Coach Leipold on last week and spoke with him about, you know, the ability to actually have a spring and the ability to be there for the entire off season, whereas last year they kind of had to just hit the ground and figure out who they even had on the team and who could play what position. And I'm curious what you think in terms of how big of a difference that can make, and is the culture set now? Like, has Lance Leipold had enough time to establish what the culture of this team and program is going to be under his watch going forward?
I think he has, and I don't think that's an easy feat. I mean, the buy-in from these guys immediately, you saw physical. You saw them physically improve very quickly. But then when you listen to them in the interviews, there was just a sense of maturity and commitment to the process that, you know, the kind of things that we weren't hearing before. So I think it is completely collective. The other part is, you know, that first season was impossible. You know, it's hard to come in summer and not have any practice. So in fall camp, you're installing something new to every single player and trying to evaluate every single player. But to their credit, they put people in positions to improve, and they did improve over the course of the season. I think the other part that's kind of part of this reformation is they have not been on the good side of the benefits of COVID. And that's a tough thing to say because COVID is such a terrible thing. But as it affected programs, over the past 2 years, it's made programs older. They've had more veteran players. And Kansas has been on the other side of that, playing 17, 27 freshmen over the last 2 years. This is the year where Kansas will actually reap the benefits from the extra year. You'll start to see some older players, some fourth, fifth, six-year players riddled throughout the lineup, and that is just not something that they've had the benefit of because they've started from behind the eight ball with all the recruiting and all, you know, how that part goes. Mm-hmm. But I will say that now there's veteran pieces here that kind of rival what everybody else is doing. So I think this will be, from a roster standpoint, the point where we benefit the most in terms of age and experience.
What are you expecting out of Devin Neal this year?
I think this guy's an all Big 12 caliber back. You know, he went to my high school, Lawrence High School, so I've watched him. I thought he was a great high school prospect, but somewhat raw. He came in to Kansas. His first couple games, he looked raw. I mean, by, like, game four, I thought his understanding of what he should be doing was far advanced for a young player, especially a speed guy. You know, he's a guy that has speed and power, but primarily known as a speed guy. Those guys want to bounce everything, and they want to get outside and show how fast they are. I would say by midseason, he'd already gotten past that and was more, you know, looking to create vertical seams and hit those and break tackles. And, you know, even the Duke game, he kind of exploded on the scene. This guy is a big, big-time talent. He was such a big get for this program. And he's the kind of piece that changes things because he's also very mature and talented. You know, at Media Day, we're sending 18- and 19-year-old players, and that's usually not a good sign. But when it's Jalen Daniels and Devin Neal, it's a great sign.
So, once again, we're visiting with Brandon McAnderson. Let's move over to the defensive side of the ball real quick. What do you think is the biggest area maybe of improvement that you expect from the defense this year, or just the biggest strength overall from the defensive side of the ball?
So I think linebackers will be most improved. I thought they were the group that was the weakest last year. But if you watch by the end of the season, Rich Miller really, really became a player, and he's one of my favorites. I thought Gavin Potter made some great improvements and had some really strong games down the stretch. So those guys are all back. And then you look at the talent that they brought in through the transfer portal, you know, guys with proven ability. You know, we got people from Central Florida. We got Craig Young from Ohio State. You know, we've got older depth in that linebacking group. And I think they'll be so improved and such a better understanding of what they're being asked to do, being that they've gone through a full offseason. I think the strength of the team will be defensive line, just because there's eight to ten people that could play four spots. And that's a good sign because you need a good rotation. I think they can rotate two and sometimes three deep without a lot of drop-off. And that's where a lot of the age is. Guys like Sam Burt, guys like Caleb Sampson, guys like Malcolm Lee, these guys have all been here for four-plus years. So these are men, you know, 22, 23, 24-year-old men. So I think that'll help a lot, especially shoring up, run defense against a pretty tough conference to defend the run against.
All right, it's going to be interesting to see what kind of improvement the Jayhawks make in year two of the Lance Leipold era. We've got Brandon McAnderson with us, of course, a part of the Jayhawk broadcast that you can hear right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. To bring it back home, though, BMAC, you and I'm really disappointed by this, by the way. I was hoping I was going to be on the same team with you, especially when I found out about your heroics from last year. But we're sworn enemies this weekend at this softball thing because we're on opposite teams. The Boys and Girls Club of Lawrence celebrity softball game coming up on Saturday at Arocha Park at 11:30. Any final comments about this big showdown between me and you?
Good luck.
Oh man, there's gonna be some big names there too. I know Tyshawn Taylor is gonna be there. Again, Brandon McAnderson is gonna be there as well. But it should be a lot of fun, right?
Absolutely. We'll have Daryl Stuckey will be there. Justin Thornton will be there. So some former pro football players. There'll be community members there like Myron Grady. So it's just it is a celebration of Lawrence, and you'll see when you get there, man. It is so unique to Lawrence. It is such a very Lawrence thing. It's not just about athletes. It's about everybody that cares about the community all coming out and supporting a spectacular cause, a place that was, you know, a transformative part of my childhood.
And I'm going to go ahead and tweet out the link to where people could donate and support us if they want to. It should be a great event, and you can get tickets, you can make donations, you can do all that stuff, and I'll put that on the website here in just a minute. BMAC, thank you so much for the time, man. Hopefully we talk to you again real soon.
All right, Nate. We'll see you soon.
All right. That is Brandon McAnderson, all-around great guy, great former Jayhawk. And he'll be involved in the celebrity softball game through the Boys and Girls Club of Lawrence on August 6th. Back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB. But we have a few things going on here at Sports Radio 810 WHB right now. It's a busy, busy time. Busy, 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 busy. All right? We got our 100 years of WHB party coming up. Coming your way a week from tomorrow. I can't believe it's almost here. It's going to be an incredible event. The list of celebrities just continues to grow. Bill Self, Bill Snyder, Matt Beasler. Did I say Matt Beasler? I did. Dustin Colquitt, Willie Wilson, Trent Green, Graham Zusi, Bill Moss, Gary Pinkel, Nicky Lopez, Johnny Russell, Alex Gordon, Greg Gurley. How did he make it on this list? Bob Kendrick, Tony Temple, Deron Cherry, Jeff Montgomery, Warren Moon, Joel Goldberg, Gino Schiraldi, one of my favorite players from the Comets when I was a kid. You kidding me? Tim Grunhard, Tyshawn Taylor, Gary Lezak, Roger Espinoza, Kathy Nelson, Christian Okoye, Jason Whitlock, Corby Jones, Brian Haney. Bill Snyder's on here twice. He deserves to be on here twice. You know why? Because he's Bill freaking Snyder, one of the greatest coaches in sports history. It's all coming up. It's going to be at the Midland Theater on Thursday, and you can't buy tickets to this thing. You got to know somebody. You know what I mean? You got to know somebody. We might be giving away tickets to that here just a little bit later on in the show. So keep listening for your chance to win. Every time we have one of these meetings where we're planning out what's going to happen, I think to myself, oh, man, this is going to be a heck of a show. This is going to be a heck of a show, and I'm excited to be a part of it. So stay tuned for the next opportunity to win yourself some tickets. Now, there's another opportunity where you can win yourself an incredible experience that you cannot buy with money. And that experience is through Sporting Kansas City, Sports Radio 810 WHB, and Children's Mercy Hospital. The I Love Children's Mercy Fund. Children's Mercy is an organization that is very near and dear to my heart. For one thing, you know, Sporting Kansas City play at Children's Mercy Park, which is one of my favorite buildings on planet Earth. I am a part, I'm on the executive board of the Victory Project with Sporting Kansas City. That is the philanthropy from Sporting KC that is dedicated to helping children who are battling cancer. I have only had to take one of my children to Children's Mercy Hospital once so far in my life, knock on wood. It's a terrifying thing when you have to put your kid in an ambulance and send them to the hospital. We had a choking episode with our youngest kid last year about this time, and it was terrifying. Had to spend the night there in the hospital. And when you think your child's life is in jeopardy, you want to be at the best facility you could possibly be at with the best doctors and nurses and equipment and everything that you could possibly want at your disposal. And that's how you feel when you go to Children's Mercy, right? So now picture being the type of parent that has to deal with a child who is battling cancer or some sort of long-term ailment or some sort of major surgery that needs to be done. You certainly want to be at a place like Children's Mercy, and you shouldn't have to, you know, be the type you, and money shouldn't be an object, right? That shouldn't be down to which people can afford to pay for that treatment and which ones can't. That's why we donate money to Children's Mercy. That's what makes Children's Mercy a magical place. So we're doing a fundraiser for them to help them raise money to make sure that every child, whoever would need treatment at Children's Mercy, can get it. And if it's families that are from out of town, they have the resources to come to Kansas City and stay here while their child receives treatment. So here's what you do. You just go to 810WHB.com, and on the top you can see a banner that says Blue Mondays Benefiting Children's Mercy. There's a button where you can click to enter to win prizes. And these prizes have basically been donated by Sporting Kansas City, and they're incredible. The type of thing you can't just buy with money. What you do is you make a $25 donation, and you basically get a raffle ticket with that $25. So if you donate $250, you get 10 raffle tickets, right? So listen to some of these things you can win if you make your donations. a Sporting KC VIP training experience. You get to attend a Sporting KC training session with me as your host. And I'm just going to tell you, as a nerd that loves to watch practices and things like that, watching a training session up close and in person run by Peter Vermes is a thing to behold. You think that you see athletes giving their maximum effort, and you watch training and you realize, man, there's a different level to what I thought was going on. We'll have great conversations about what's happening during the training session. You'll get a behind-the-shield opportunity that includes meeting a Sporting KC coach and member of the team, a player as well. And it also includes photo opportunities, right? You can't just go out and buy that on SeatGeek or at ticketsforless.com. So you make your donation, you get a chance to win that. We've got a VIP match day experience, which includes four premium seats to a game in one of the executive areas. The match will also include a meet and greet with a Sporting KC player that's not suited up for that game, so it could be an injured player that's not playing that day, someone like that. We've got a premium ticket package, a youth experience, including an appearance by Blue, the mascot. All of it's right there at the website. You just go to 810whb.com and look for the tab that says Blue Mondays Benefiting Children's Mercy. And that's the best thing is all you're doing is making a donation, right, to a charity. So keep your receipts, all that stuff. But you're making a donation to a great cause, and in the process, you have a chance to win something that would be absolutely priceless. So it's a win-win for everybody involved, and we're trying to raise as much money as we possibly can for Children's Mercy. So please do it, 810whb.com, and make your donations, and we would really, really appreciate it. Okay, so with that, we're going to take a break. We've got Nick Leckie coming up next right here on the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB.